It's time to relax with the Offspring.
We are here for another podcast.
That's right.
Still here, man. Still here.
It's almost like we're a real band.
After all these weeks.
Yeah. This is almost like a real podcast now.
What's going on with you, Blackball? What obnoxious thing did you do lately?
Just the fucking hockey game, man.
The hockey game.
Yeah, just.
You're in pig heaven right now, aren't you, with the hockey
game? Yeah. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
The Anaheim Ducks asked us to have an Offspring night, I guess, a collaboration, right?
Because it's 30 years. This year marks 30 years of the Anaheim Ducks and 30 years of Smash. And so we did a collab with them. And they set up like a record store part of their their store, the Duck store at the Honda Center. And so we had like our own little corner. We had little pucks and records for sale and t-shirts.
Right on. And jerseys.
Although they screwed up my jersey. Like everyone had a jersey with their name printed on it, but they printed mine up Noodle.
Noodle.
Instead of Noodles.
So, he doesn't want to be called Noodle.
No, I hate that. I hate that.
It was really cool. It was called a come out and play night. You know, they thought of everything.
It was fun. I got to drive the Zamboni.
I did. Really?
Yeah.
Life-size life-size cardboard cutouts.
Yes.
Yeah. No, they did it up, man, and it was so much fun. Getting to drop the ceremonial puck, you guys did. I got to go press the take flight button to kind of start the game, man. I'm a big hockey guy, so I was just totally like head over heels. That's why I didn't get too fucked up at the beginning because I wanted to pace myself because I wanted to kind of remember.
But by the end,
I was feeling it pretty good,
feeling
man.
Good.
I was feeling good, but yeah, they did such a great job, with it all. So
you were dancing with the mascot by the end.
I was dry humping. I didn't even. I forgot their kid in the room. I'm
dry
over there
humping Wild Wing.
Forgot there were kids there. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we just got caught up in the moment. You know,
one thing led to another. Next thing you know, I just kind of
grinding.
It was fun. Yeah, that was a good time.
Well, we're very lucky. Lucky to be joined today by legendary drummer.
Yes.
Adrian, thank you so much for coming out today.
Hello, gentlemen.
Adrian Young of No Doubt is here today. We're very excited.
Hi. Yeah.
And others. And others, yeah.
You know a little bit about Anaheim.
Yeah.
So
a little bit, yeah.
OC guy.
Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah. You know, there's so much to talk about. I don't even know where to start, but that's kind of the idea of this podcast. We don't really have an agenda. You can start with.
Well, there
you
is
want,
an Orange County thing because we used to record at the same studio for our demos.
I was
going to
talk about
bands.
This. Yeah, yeah.
Jim Dotson.
Yeah, South Coast Recording.
Oh,
South Coast.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
South Coast. That's right.
Place.
I forgot.
Yeah.
See, there's all these
connections.
I didn't
know you guys recorded there. I had forgotten. Yeah.
We did. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this guy Jim owned a studio. He ran it himself. And he charged us back then, it was like $10 an hour. It was really,
cheap.
Really cheap.
Super cheap. I think eventually we were up to 15.
to raise his prices.
Yeah.
But so we went there every chance we got. Every time we could save up $30 or $40, we could knock out a demo song in a couple hours and stuff. I just heard from Jim a couple days ago. He's going to be in town.
Did you?
He doesn't live here anymore. But yeah. But what a cool spot, because it really, I don't know how it was for you, but it really gave us a place where we could kind of learn how to record and develop that songwriting process.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That we couldn't have done otherwise, because you have to be able to record and hear it back and all that.
Yeah.
So we were a lot better at recording than we were at playing live
for
a long time. Now maybe it's catching up.
I still am, Dexter. But give me enough takes, I can get it right.
But what was your, you were there a lot, like you recorded a whole album or two albums there, I think.
Well, we intended to record like our first record there, and we weren't signed, so we were all just doing it ourselves. And this is probably, I guess, 90, 91, somewhere in there.
Yeah,
I think.
We did ours in 89, our first
record. During that process, or after we recorded it, we actually got signed to Interscope. In 91, I think. So we never released the stuff we recorded there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. But it, like you said, it was a great learning experience, how to record.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were pretty green and young at it. And we were kind of the opposite. We were better live than we were recording. So it was good for us to kind of get our recording chops that way.
Right.
Yeah.
We couldn't find a place to play for us. I don't know. Maybe because it was more of a punk thing that
clubs,
they want to have bands like us play and stuff. So
yeah,
we kind of ended up in the studio more often than not. But so you have a whole album that you finished, and you didn't even re-record some of the songs when you got signed to Interscope?
We did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I remember Jim playing some of it for me one time when I was in there and going, wow, man, these guys are going to be huge.
We didn't think that.
I remember we were both rehearsing at the same spot. We usually rehearsed in around Orange County, well, this side of Orange County. But one time we were out in Fullerton and you guys were rehearsing. I remember going, we're leaking and looking in your window going, oh man, No Doubt's here. You know, and all of a sudden we see, I think it was Tony looking on us too, you know. We both were kind of bubbling up around the same time.
Yeah.
We were kind of crossing paths here and there, right? Mm-hmm. Like another one that I remember that was really cool is that things had happened for us in 94. You guys was 95 or 96, I think, right?
It was our Tragic Kingdom came out in October of 95, but it really didn't start to gain traction until early 96.
96, okay. Right? Yeah, right. So we got offered to play this show that was basically put on by a ski resort. It was like a private ticket, right? I think it was in Salt Lake City or something.
Was it that Salt Palace, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it was going to be us and No Doubt and Sublime. We all played the same show once in 95.
Oh, yeah.
Things hadn't happened for you guys or for Sublime so much quite yet. Yeah. But so it's just funny to look at that bill and go, wow, what a monster bill. How cool that was.
Totally.
Can you imagine if we did that now?
It's a stadium lineup
now. Dude, totally, like, right? Yeah, SoFly. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
In fact, I think Gwen was handing out cassettes. She was like, really wanting people to hear, check out our new demo, right? Backstage. But yeah, so funny.
Those are the days of grinding.
Yeah. For sure. Whatever you can do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Making our own t-shirts, all that kind of stuff. Recording.
Mailing list parties.
Yeah.
We were so dumb that we would have mailing list parties writing back, you know, the whatever few fans we had at the time. But we didn't have, we would lick the stamps.
Oh, right.
And so your tongue would get all fucking parched and weird. And then someone came up with a genius idea of like, hey, take a sponge, wet it, and then you could put the stamp on that and then put it on the envelope self-adhesive stamps.
Wow. How we funny. Once glued together our own record covers because we had them printed up, 1,000 of them, and it was going to cost more to have them folded and glued. And we're like, we can't afford that. So we
had them stamped out. We did the folding and gluing ourselves.
Folding and gluing.
Yep. The amount of care, right? It just went into the whole thing.
Oh, we would get drunk while we were doing it. We'd have a party over at either your house or James' house.
The passion's there, you know? It's like, we care about our band so much that we whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to hold something like, wow, this is... It's like a real record,
right? Yeah, that was.
I remember when we finally got Smash or Ignition out. We had our first CDs. Epitaph made some CDs.
That was mind blowing.
And being in your backyard, drinking beer by the pool, and putting on. We had the 5-CD disc changer, putting like Social Distortion, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Offspring, and a couple others. And it would come up and play in between that. It was almost like. Yeah, man, we're like a real band.
Yeah, look at these other CDs in the changer, right? Yeah. So rad. Yeah,
the impression that you're up there with those guys.
That's right.
There's a lot of people that are going to listen to this and say, what is a CD changer?
Oh, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, totally.
They're Googling it right now.
Yeah,
our kids.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh, man. Well, but yeah, there's something very special about that ride when you start and it's nothing for so long, and then it really turns into something. And how was that for you? Because you experienced something very similar, it seems like.
It didn't feel real because it was unexpected. And, you know, our first record, Interscope, didn't have any kind of national traction. We didn't get any radio play. And it took so long to make Tragic Kingdom... mainly because the label was kind of staving us off, and you know, they would say, "Okay, we found a cheap studio. Can you guys come up this weekend?" And then, like a month later, same kind of thing. And so, it just that process for Tragic Kingdom went on for like 2.5 years.
That's how you recorded Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah.
Like that? Okay.
So
yeah.
You know, in between our jobs and school and the label's willingness to put us in the studio, and so we were very skeptical. You know, this was going to amount to much of anything.
Right, right. And, already, you know, once burned, twice shy, right? The first record.
And also, you know, in the mid-90s, K-Rock was being dominated by you guys, Green Day, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, heavier bands.
Yeah.
And it was hard to envision a path for No Doubt to be on modern rock radio. So the whole thing just didn't seem real.
Right.
And then when it started to happen, it was very, very surprising.
Huh. What was the first single, Just a Girl? Was that the first one to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you guys had a bunch to follow it up with.
Isn't it funny he's saying, like, it didn't seem like the landscape was right for us, but when you look at it now, it looks so obvious.
It does.
Like, of course you guys were going to be
huge, right? For sure, in hindsight.
But isn't that something? So they would only put you in the studio for a day or two at a time? You had to just...
It was just so scattered, and it just... We didn't even feel like that record was going to get finished.
Wow.
We just didn't feel like the label believed in the band. And so what we did is we said, well... Man, you know, we have a local following. We want to put out music. So we said, fuck it. We're going to record all the songs that we know are not going to be on Tragic Kingdom if it ever comes out. And we're just going to go record them ourselves, pay for it ourselves, and put them out. Even though we're signed Interscope, right, we felt like they're not going to give a shit.
Right.
And they didn't. And so we put out this thing called the Beacon Street Collection, which is essentially a B-sides record to Tragic Kingdom, but it came out before.
Wow.
To service like, you know, our goals and needs and the local fan base that we had at the time.
That's rad. That's rad.
Something
that's
for the mailing
rock,
list,
man.
Party, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
And then when it took off, was it K-Rock? What got it started?
I think it was the Poor Man that first played us.
Okay.
So it was local radio, though, is what
but
it was.
But was he still
right?
on K-Rock then?
Man, I can't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, if you ask him, he'll be the person to say I was the first guy to play No Doubt. Maybe his first album, because now my memory's getting a little sketchy. But it just kind of slow rolled, and it went from a couple stations to, you know, the entire format across the country, and so we just started hitting the road and doing every interview we could do, and. Yeah. Try to introduce the country to the band.
Yeah. For us, our big break was definitely K-Rock took Come Out and Play and made it something. It was Jed the Fish, actually. Played it first catch of the day.
Mm.
And we got on the phone immediately and called, play that again. That was great. Play that again. Pretending we don't know who that was.
It's not us, but
I remember that.
But eventually more and more people were calling, and it wasn't just us. But the thing about that, it wasn't like, you know, tweet your response now. It was calling, actually picking up the phone and dialing and calling back then. You know, a lot of kids don't know what that
request
is.
Request line. Remember that?
Request line.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Furious Five at 9. It was all they would take all the calls.
Oh, that's what it was.
Furious Five at 9.
That's what it was for us.
Okay.
Yes. Thanks for reminding.
Yeah. that was a good one.
We were trying to get our aunt to call and our moms to call and whoever you could think of.
Call
and, you know,
you had me call. You're like, dude, call. tell your friends, tell everyone to call. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Yep.
And luckily for us, it just kind of started to work on its own, right?
Well, the saying back then was, as goes K-Rock, so goes the country, right? So all the alternative radio stations at the time would really look at K-Rock. Not 100% of them, but most of them did.
Yeah.
Well, they were definitely the trailblazers in that whole era, you know, so
We were talking, we were talking recently, and there was this one guy who just, I don't like The Offspring. It's like, no, he wouldn't play us. I can't remember what market or what radio station.
Some radio guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I'm not going to play them.
There was a guy at K-Rock, and I don't know if it was a program director at the time or somebody that was talking about our first album, and they told the Interscope rep that it would take an act of God for No Doubt to get on K-Rock.
Wow.
I'm not a religious guy, but I find that really funny.
Yeah.
I wonder what he's doing now.
Yeah.
Promoted.
Well, you're still on K-Rock.
He's ahead of some label, I'm sure, now. Yeah. Ahead of a label now is like purgatory, isn't it, compared to what it used to be. Back then, records still made money back in the mid-90s.
What do they do now? I'm not sure.
Oh, they're killing it on streaming.
Streaming. Okay.
Oh, they're just hand over fist.
Yeah. Right.
Are they really?
Yeah.
What about the artists?
Same.
Not so much.
Take it up the
ass. I can't wait to get our songs on TikTok.
Say thank you for signing us and take it up the ass.
Actually, I think we probably get more plays on TikTok now that Taylor Swift isn't on TikTok anymore, right?
Oh.
A bunch of bands just got taken off TikTok, and Taylor was one of them. So.
Okay.
Why did they get taken off?
I didn't know this.
They weren't paying. TikTok wasn't paying enough. And
Universal.
So it was, yeah, it was
oh, so the
Universal
labels
group, right?
Pulled them off.
It was, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I tried to do the math once. It was like 0.00000 whatever cents or whatever. It's like really, really small. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, I like that it's getting played a lot. I mean, you know, we get played, streamed, probably way more than the radio airplay.
Our egos are off the charts. It's our bank accounts that need help.
We're huge on Spotify, okay?
Yeah. Tons of likes. Tons of likes.
You should see our Instagram.
Yeah.
We're killing it on Instagram.
Played with some other bands you were talking about. You sat in with The Start here in this room.
Yeah, I did a few shows with them in like the mid to late 2000s. I filled in for the Vandals a handful of times over the past 26 years.
That's got to be fun.
Those are some shoes to fill, man.
Yeah, you think?
Josh Fries and Brooks Wackerman. It's just so intimidating because those guys are just really special drummers. But, you know, they're all friends and, you know, I love doing it.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a good challenge, and I like to be challenged. So
those guys, I've always said, I think I said even just a little while ago, the Vandals are they're all out of their minds, crazy and you know, and unique thinkers, but they're all some of the brightest, wittiest guys, all four of them, brightest, wittiest guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah, they're stage.
You know, always great stories, great comebacks. It's just,
yeah.
You know, Dave's wit.
You know. I saw a couple of those shows where you played them. I thought you were great. Man. It was really
good.
Thank
you.
Right on.
Held her own. It was all right. All right.
Sometimes I feel like I'm hanging by a thread, so that's nice to hear.
How was Bow Wow Wow? You played with Bow Wow Wow.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was like in the mid-2000s. And,
okay.
You know, that was, as a teen, they were one of the bands that I was really into.
Did you get to play the drums with the big horns coming off the bottom?
So I had some drums built like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't quite a horn, but it was more like an open marching shell with like a tooth thing on it. Man, now that was also very challenging because the thing about Bow Wow Wow is they had, so the rhythm section of Bow Wow Wow was the original Ants for Adam and the Ants on the first record. And then they left Adam and they formed Bow Wow Wow. And so they came up with this whole Burundi groove between the drummer and the bass player. And it sounded like two drummers because Lee Gorman, the bass player, was so percussive, an incredible musician. And when Adam went to replace them, it didn't sound right.
Yeah,
so
right?
They got two drummers.
Oh, that's where that came from.
And so playing with Bow Wow Wow was crazy because the drum parts were so unique and so different. And I was kind of put through the grinder on that by Lee Gorman. He's like, whenever I thought, okay, I got this, he's like, no. We're going to go back
and do it again.
Oh, you got to really think about this Burundi rhythm in a certain way. And it's like, okay.
That could be humbling, but you must have learned so much from
it. It made me better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I got to play with one of my hero bands.
Yeah,
so
right?
It was cool.
Yeah, I saw them open up for the Pretenders at the Forum in, God, 83, 84, something like that. Wow. It was incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe 85.
Wow. I'm pretty sure they were my first concert.
Wow.
At Irvine Meadows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I remember. Do you remember back in the day in the early '80s? You probably don't remember this, but there was a whole thing about who's hotter, Madonna or Paula Abdul. Do you remember they were like neck and neck for a second, kind of?
Yeah,
kind of like that.
I don't really remember.
Kind of like you two in Big Country. Which one's better, right? You know, you look, you look back in retrospect and realize one was much bigger than the other. But for a minute, it was who was hotter between the singer for Bow Wow Wow and Claire from Altered Images, right? Like there were two camps at the time.
It's got to be Annabelle.
Yeah.
Right?
That mohawk?
Yeah, totally. Come on.
That was my vote.
She also had this sort of exotic look about her, too. She was just stunning.
We had friends that were way into Claire, though. That was Tyler and a couple of those other guys or whatever were on that side.
Those dumb guys we used to hang out with.
Annabella was like 14 years old when she joined that band.
Yeah, right? Wow.
That is what is so amazing, right? Just a kid.
Yeah.
So cool. So how long did you play with them?
I think it was like 2 or 3 years.
Wow. Awesome.
How fun.
Yeah.
Touring and all that stuff.
Yeah, we did. We went to the East Coast and did mostly West Coast dates. So it wasn't like full blown tour, but yeah.
Now, didn't you, with No Doubt, play an Adam Ant song on, what was it, Gilmore Girls or something? Didn't you do Stand and Deliver for a TV show?
Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl. Gossip yeah. Girl. Yeah. How was that? How was the
we
TV
We butchered
thing?
It pretty good.
Did you? All right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, did you get to go, like, spend time on a TV set? What was that? Like,
Yeah. There was some scene. I totally forget. You're bringing up all this shit I forgot about.
All right. Yeah. Sorry if it's a bad
good.
Memory. Yeah.
No, it's a fine memory. I just can't remember half the things we did.
Right.
What hasn't this guy done? Jeez, come on. What a career, man. I just collect stamps.
And run marathons.
Yeah, and PhDs.
You should try licking them.
Degrees and flight school certifications.
That's just self-punishment. This is fun stuff here going on. This is great. So, anyway, you Stand and Deliver. Sorry, I think I interrupted here.
Oh yeah, we went and filmed the scene for the show, and that's pretty much it.
All right. Yeah. I don't know who's in Gossip Girl. I don't know that show.
I don't either.
Yeah. So much stuff. I've heard the name. But.
Now, we heard a rumor that, I guess it's more than a rumor now, that you're going to be playing Coachella.
Yes. Yeah.
With No Doubt.
Amazing.
Yep. First time. Another thing we've played in 9 years.
Wow. Another thing we can't do.
Have
Coachella.
You guys ever have you ever done Coachella? Now, didn't Dream Car do Coachella?
We did in 2017. We played in one of the tents. And No Doubt was supposed to do it. We were supposed to headline the first year they went to 2 weekends.
Okay.
And then
I don't know when that was, but
pulled out. And then it just kept being offered to us in one form or another. And for various reasons, we could never pull it together. So this finally is going to happen. It's going to be the first time we can go play.
I'm stoked. I mean, I'm
thanks.
Stoked.
Same here.
For all you guys. Yeah, that's rad. That's
gonna it's going to be huge.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be huge.
You're playing both weekends?
Yeah.
Is it just one night each weekend, or do you guys do multiple nights? Do you know?
No, each band will play. It plays one night.
One night. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Oh, that's going to be amazing, dude.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Dusty. Very dusty.
I've never been. You know what? I would love to see you guys play. I'm not going to go to Coachella.
I don't blame you because it's become quite an it's so big, and getting in and out of that city has become quite a thing.
I love it out there. I love the desert. I have this fixation with the Salton Sea, which is nearby. I took my son. We did
it's the meth.
We did it. Yeah, a meth field weekend.
Have you seen the documentary about that
place? I stayed
place?
Sober out there last time I was out there. The Plagues and Pleasures of the Salton Sea. Yes.
Wow.
John Waters narrates it. I love it. Amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So we stayed in Bombay Beach. Me and my son, we got an Airbnb. It was a little.
You did not.
Yeah, it was a little shipping container turned into like a
it
little
really is
trailer.
About the
man. And dude, seriously. Well, then you go to Slab City, and I think they're cooking in there somewhere. There's like a bar in there you can go to.
Of course
and,
there is.
Yeah, but the artwork is just it's amazing. There's so much creativity going on. I really meth feel creativity. But it's really bitchin'. It's a bitchin' place, and it's trippy. It's super trippy. So I do have a fixation with it. But the Coachella scene, all the people, and I get a little claustrophobic in crowds now, interestingly.
How
Which
ironic.
Is great for a musician.
Yeah.
I don't mind being up on stage. It's fun, you know, but when I'm surrounded by people, but Disneyland's the same thing. I'll go with in disguise with Disneyland. I can't handle it. It's like, people, the Orange County Fair. I can't walk around the fair. I can't enjoy it. It's kind of weird.
And you developed this over time?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's always a little bit there, but I developed it more. Yeah, for sure. So,
It happens. I know I used to just, every show I'd go to, I was always in the pit, right? And then all of a sudden, I just didn't want people's body fluid on me all of a sudden. And I don't know when or why it happened, but...
Is there something about you that makes people want to throw their bodily fluid
just
on
the
you?
Sweat and, you know, touching, I don't know, but it's kind of the same.
Now, see, concerts, kind of the same, concerts I'll make an exception for. I prefer if I can get backstage, but but as long as there's music, I'll make the exception for it usually. You know, I really do enjoy that. So.
Wow. Well, Coachella's just gotten so huge, right?
I mean, almost it's too huge, yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, they expanded it, and they because I used to go for like the first 10 years, and now it's like twice the size. Right.
Is it really? Yeah. Wow. Oh.
I used to go to Warped Tour pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm.
I love
Same.
That. Yeah. So.
Maybe one day we'll get the nod. I don't know. We haven't been invited yet, so I don't
You've never done the Warped Tour?
Or no, no, sorry, Coachella.
Coachella.
Yeah. Coachella, yeah. Warp we did once. I don't know. We're just going to, we'll keep on practicing.
We did the whole tour once. We did a couple other shows.
What year was that?
2005. We did the whole tour. Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah. And with Dropkick was on there. And
yep.
It was a big year, actually.
Yeah, that was
Avenged
a really
Sevenfold,
good year.
Sevenfold, My Chemical Romance was on that.
Oh, wow.
Andrew WK was out. I think he was, I don't think he was playing. Was he playing or was he just emceeing?
I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of people on that one.
We did the first year, and it was like, because it was a new festival, it was very poorly attended.
I saw you guys play at Irvine. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Irvine one was pretty good. Yeah, but some of the other West Coast, you know, they were in venues that were way too big.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys played the Gorge in Seattle. It was the Gorge. And, like, George Washington, like, way out. That's where you guys played.
Were you
too,
already up in Seattle for the first Warped Tour?
No, I wasn't. But I had friends who went to it. So they were a couple of the people that were there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was – I've been there. I saw the second one, second Warped Tour. I think that was at the Kingdom. But
talk about a big show, Anaheim Stadium, right? The K-Rock.
Weenie Roast.
You guys did it, and a lot of heavy bands that year.
STP, Ozzy Osbourne, and Black Sabbath.
Right. Yeah.
There's a bunch of great bands on that.
Creed.
That's right.
Creed was on that show.
Lots of great bands. And Creed.
Creed, K-Rock, like. If you look back at that, does that work for you?
The what? The Creed at the K-Rock thing?
Yeah.
Not really, but yeah.
Because they were on the rotating stage, so we were going to rotate right after them. They put us on right after Creed, I guess. But I just remember it sounding, it was perfectly executed.
Had we made those shirts yet by then?
The Creed?
Everybody,
oh.
Even Jesus hates Creed?
I had a buddy who made a funny line one time. He just said, even Jesus hates Creed. And I thought,
was that you?
That's funny.
I don't think so.
I think it was Ivan. So. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You made shirts, right?
So we made shirts. I had my guy draw up cartoon Jesus going like this, and you can find it online.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Jesus
really
going like this.
Funny.
Jesus going like this, and Scott Stapp going like this.
I know. Maybe we shouldn't be making fun anymore. We're supposed to be more mature now, but it was funny.
It was funny at the time.
It wasn't nothing personal. It was just too good to pass up, right?
Well, did you see they were in a Super Bowl commercial and they're kind of making fun of themselves? Yeah. So they know. They know that, you know, they got poked a lot of fun at. So.
Yeah.
It's like Nickelback. You know, they got similar kind of hate, and I don't really get the Nickelback stuff because I don't think. At least Chad didn't try to pretend to be Jesus as much, right? I kind of like Nickelback.
Yeah. Well, Nickelback.
I like Nickelback.
They made shirts too that said like it was something like if you either like Nickelback or you're lying or something like that, and sold them, which is kind of funny.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, that's funny. So. Yeah.
But, oh, man. Well, I wanted to sell these shirts, and I called our manager Jim, your guy's manager as well. He goes, no, you can't do that. I go, well, what do you mean? Come on, it's harmless. And he goes, I'd sue you. If it was my band, I'd sue you. Like, all right. So it was just something we made, I don't know, 50 of them or 100 and just kind of gave them out. But
No,
I never sold them, but it kind of like you can find them out there. I think other people have made them, maybe.
I still got one.
I still have one, too.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
I'm sure Donnie Spada still has his.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Donnie. Love that guy.
Donnie was our guitar tech for a long time. Your guys' guitar tech for a long time. Just a sweetheart and a funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
Such a funny guy. Oh, he was like in our intermission. He's kind of the heavyset guy in a G-string during like
also on a shirt.
So, yeah, also on a shirt. And we had a shirt with Donnie.
So tell me, obviously, you're No Doubt has been in a long hiatus. So how is that when you get invited to this huge festival and, like, what kind of preparation? Like, how is that a big deal to get the band back together and rehearse?
It is because, you know, well, if Coachella has their already built-in production and screens and lights, but we're going to be bringing in a lot of extra production. And, you know, to get that together by April when we haven't been on the road and we don't have a rolling rig or a crew to put all this together in a short amount of time is going to be quite a thing. Because we can't just, like, do the throw and go. We got to do some serious preparation.
Yep.
It's kind of like preparing for a full production tour for just two shows.
For one show. That's what I was thinking, right?
Yeah.
We just we got new guitar rigs made up that we just got back like last week. And so we decided to set up practice and try them out. And it was freaking, it took us like 3 days to get the guitars together, right? Because it's just like, oh, that doesn't sound right. And you got different sounds on different songs. And like, it was a lot. And I'm saying that's just for the guitar. So I can't imagine.
That wasn't, it, you know, video with, or set, you know, or anything. Yeah. That was just guitar sounds. Yeah. Yeah.
And I imagine you probably, you're not just going to play the set list. It's got to be, there's going to be some kind of show, I'm sure, right? So you got to figure out what those elements are.
Yeah. There's a lot to figure out. And what is it? Mid-February, and we got to
2 months
get this thing together.
Yeah.
It sounds like a long time, but it doesn't feel like it.
It goes fast.
Yeah.
Goes fast. Wow. Well,
I bet playing the songs will come back, you know.
Yeah. Well, Tom, Tony, and myself, we're already getting together at my house and just kind of getting the dust off.
Right.
Or the rust off, as they say. And so that, you know, by the time we all get together with the crew and the rest of the band, you know, we'll be solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's like muscle memory, some of that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everyone's a little older.
Muscles are a little more sore.
Yeah. Or, and like, you know, running the set like multiple times a day is probably not in the cards.
Right.
Right.
It's probably run it once each day.
And you're fresh.
Yeah. Stamina's not there. And, you know, I've had like wrist surgery and rotator cuff problems.
Oh,
and,
geez,
you know,
kind of
a broken down middle-aged man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
never.
We're all feeling that.
Never admit that. No.
Dex are still running marathons.
Half marathons.
You look like it. You look good. Looking
thank
tight.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
He has been. He's been running and doing the, half Ironman competition? So half a marathon, swimming. And
I got into the triathlon thing. You know, I used to run forever, and then your knees start hurting as you get older, right? And I had to stop running, so what I did, I just switched to this because you kind of spread it out. A little run, a little swim, a little bike and stuff. And it gives you lots of cardio, but doesn't trash your knees so much. So
yeah,
it's worked for me.
Good.
It's okay. Yeah.
Are you ready? In case you got invited to the Super Bowl, like Usher ripping his shirt off, you got to look good.
Yeah.
That's you know? Right.
I'm just,
he was ripped.
Dude,
Yeah.
I'm just getting ready for that Coachella invite. Yeah. One day.
Coachella.
One day. Come on, man.
Yeah. The Super Bowl just happened. You guys played the Super Bowl once, but didn't you guys play the beginning? You didn't play the halftime show, or did you
we
play
did.
The halftime? You did play the halftime show.
We played
show.
Halftime in 2003, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. How was that experience?
Wow. That's a different thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
bet.
It's such a – this talk about a lot of production or things to navigate through. You
right.
know?
Yeah, yeah. Because
they put the stage together, you know, within a matter of – a few minutes.
Yeah.
They roll it out there and it's like you got to get this thing in a matter of time. And when we were exiting the field, the kicking squad was already doing their practice kicks. And so like, you know, I'm going through the end zone and this fucking football comes whizzing by my head because they're doing practice kicks
Whoa.
Right from midfield.
Yeah. Wow.
That's how seamless or how tight the time frame is. But what a rush. I mean, that's like
and you have
the
to
largest.
Go. You have to be, yeah, there's no, you have to go. Like, you can't go, wait, I got to go to the bathroom. Like,
yeah.
You can at your own show if you have to, but you can't do that there. Like, no.
Can't
or
go
were you wearing
late.
A diaper?
Can't
or were you wearing
late.
A diaper at the time?
Oh, so I was warned that if I do anything fucked up like that.
At the Super Bowl,
that I won't be on camera and they might causes problems.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, if you want to play in front of, you know, 800 million people.
Yeah, that's,
you
that is
wear
the
a diaper.
The biggest
like, all right, I'll put a shirt on and
had to play it straight.
Wear the diaper under the clothes.
Yeah.
Always.
Didn't a member of P-Funk threaten to sue you to stop wearing a diaper? He claimed he had trademarked the diaper.
Yeah, that is accurate. Yeah, so I didn't steal it from him, but I used to wear a diaper on stage and piss in it and chuck it in the audience and just you know, just all things wrong, right?
Right. Yeah.
And
have your kids seen the video? Have your kids seen the video of you doing this?
I don't think it's on video because like
late
90s.
Yeah, no phones, but
But And then, I did it at the MTV Music Awards. We presented an award.
Right.
And
I remember seeing that. I remember watching that on
TV.
And
then I got the letter from the management okay. the guitar player saying this is his thing, and this is a cease and desist. You How can't funny. Be stealing his idea. And I said, all right, fair enough. Yeah. He was doing it in the '70s. That's not where I got it, but fair
right,
enough.
Right,
so
right.
I just stopped doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
It had run its course anyway.
Yeah, it's you took the joke pretty far. I think the MTV Awards, that was kind of your crowning achievement, pretty much anyways, no
That's
pun intended.
Mic drop.
No
you.
Pun intended.
Mic drop. Yeah. Yeah. Life goals.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Whoa.
That's awesome.
Jeez.
Wow.
Who would have thought that?
If anything, I stole. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah,
if
no,
anything,
no.
I stole like a lot of my antics from your next guest, Warren.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
oh, of course.
Just whipping your dick out on stage. And...
oh, my God.
He's Warren
so,
is another
so
whole
genius.
Different animal. Yeah.
And out of his mind, completely out of his mind. In all the right ways.
In the good, in the best way.
Yeah. I love that guy.
Ditto.
So funny.
Man, so funny. So tell us about some of the bands that you've been playing with more recently. And with Dream Car, we mentioned.
Well, you got shows coming up with Dream Car too, though, at this pretty cool festival.
It's an 80s festival, which is kind of weird because we're not from the 80s.
I know, right?
But it's
you
the sound
like
of the record
are.
We made,
you
I
sound
guess.
Like you are.
Yeah.
It's called Cruel World in Pasadena.
That's right, the Cruel World Festival,
in May.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That should be fun. Hopefully they have better weather. Although they pulled it off, but they had to do like an extra day because of
yeah,
the rain,
I was
right?
there with my daughter. There was lightning. And
yeah.
So Iggy Pop's set got cut short and Susie
and
didn't
Susie's,
go on, so she came back the next night and
that's
played.
Great that was great
and
yeah.
I'm stoked to be playing because Dream Car hasn't played in 7 years, so to answer your question, I haven't been in a live band actively for 7 years and 9 years.
Wow.
Except for the occasional fill in with the Vandals or whomever. I've been mostly been playing on records, and most of that's from my own recording studio at home. And I've become quite a studio rat, actually, just mixing records, engineering records, producing records, scoring films with a partner of mine named Todd Foreman. You guys might know him. He played sax and Sublime back in the day in the 40 Ounces of Freedom days.
Okay.
Okay.
And then he stopped playing with them to go to Harvard. And then he's a doctor. He's a
family. He's a slouch. He didn't want to get a real job. He went back to school instead. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Wait for that TikTok money.
What did he get his degree in at Harvard?
So he's a doctor, and so he runs a
medical
family
practice.
Yeah, he runs
practice
in Orange County, and then comes over to my place, and we just hit it production team.
He's like our old drummer is a doctor. He's an oncological surgeon. That was the last podcast we released, and he has this crazy, weird, kind of Devo-esque residence sort of music project called
Bunko.
Bunko.
Yeah. That's right.
That's funny.
How funny. I always thought
I'm making music.
Fascinated, amazed by people who do soundtracks because it's not like a song structure necessarily, right? It's I don't know where you even come up with. Where do you start doing a score?
That's kind of what I wondered, because it was never a goal of mine to do this. And to make a long story bearable, I mean, a friend of mine who owns a production company asked us if we would take on a film, Todd and I. So we said, yeah, we'll go for it. And at first I thought it was just going to be a couple songs. And then we ended up doing the entire movie.
Oh, wow.
And music supervising it. And it was quite a learning curve. And we loved it. Because the process we took and we've been taking ever since is we'll talk to the director, get a vibe of what they're looking for in general senses. And then we read the script and we'll start sketching ideas. And so Todd plays keyboard and sax. And I play a little guitar and the drums. And so we'll start to craft like little ideas after reading the script. And then once we start to see the footage of the film come in, then we'll start applying what we sketched out to see if it works at all in the scenes. And then show the director and he'll say, or she'll say, yes, no, yes, no. And then we take their direction and start scoring directly to the scenes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So some of the stuff we had done to script will get used, and then we just expand on that to real footage.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
To write just to a script is really interesting, right? Like,
and like you said, it's not a song.
Yeah.
Except for the stuff we license.
You're just kind of going for the mood, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just a keyboard, or sometimes it's like I get on an electronic drum set and make this weird little percussive loop, or, you know, I line up a bunch of pedals, pull out a guitar, and just start vibing, you know?
Uh-huh. Rad. Yeah.
And you can get as weird as you want because it's not, you're not crafting a song for the radio.
Yeah, right.
For our studio nerds out there, are there any like particular things you go to for your sound, your plugins, anything like that? That you have a favorite or a go-to, or is it just kind of whatever?
I mean, I'm a fan of outboard gear, so I have a SSL console and a bunch of rack of commercial studio gear that I prefer. But as far as the plugins go, I mean, Universal Audio probably has the best lineup of plugins, but I mean, you guys probably know this. There's so many good makers now of plugins. Right. Like that menu is endless.
Yeah. Can you imagine going to his home studio? It's got gold all over the walls. It's gilded. It's, you know,
use diapers in the corner.
I want to see that place.
Do you work with local bands as well?
A little bit of everything.
Yes.
Producing. So what are some good local bands coming up?
So there was this band from Long Beach called Strawberry Army that's fronted by these two twin girls.
Okay.
There's another band we're working with right now called the Side Chicks. And you know, so a lot of times we'll work with unsigned bands and we'll put their music in the movie. Like we'll license songs from these bands we work with sometimes, especially for the lower budget movies.
Right. Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool. Yeah.
It's a good platform for them to, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Get a film and.
That's rad.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
All right.
I'm always looking for local bands to go see. So Side Chicks and Strawberry Army.
Yeah.
Check them out.
Cool. Are we golfing?
I don't golf anymore.
Really? At all?
Yeah.
Oh,
I stopped playing competitively in 2018. And once that happened, I just realized I was just in the grind for all the wrong reasons. And I stopped practicing and stopped playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I was clearly burnt out. And, but in addition to that, I had like wrist surgery in 2021. And,
what's harder on the wrist, golfing or playing drums?
Probably golfing.
Really?
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I would have thought that would have gone the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because when the club makes impact, you're making impact with the ground with such force because you're using all the torque of your body, whereas with drums, you're kind of just letting the weight of the stick do its thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But, man, that kind of sucked, to be honest with you, to, like, go through months and months, actually 18 months of physical therapy.
Oh, I bet.
To be able to just play drums again without being excruciating pain.
Yeah.
It was a bum out.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You're like the most avid golfer that I know.
Yeah.
I guess. So I'm surprised to hear that you've not.
So Ken
all,
Casey from Dropkick Murphys, could you kick his ass in golf back in the day?
Well,
did you ever play with Ken?
I didn't, but when I was playing competitively and I was trying to get as good as I possibly could, I was really giving it a go. I was playing city championships and then sometimes I would play mini tour stuff.
Okay.
So, and I got as low as a +1.5 handicap. So I don't know where he was at, but that's where I was at.
I think you could kick Ken's ass. I don't know. I just like saying that. He loves. Oh, he's a talker, Boston guy.
Basically, pro guy here. So.
Yeah. Well, wannabe pro guy.
Everyone I've talked to that's golfed with you said like, no, that guy can play. You were no slouch. So.
Well, the word was.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was so fucking hard because you look at some of these golfers on TV, the best of the best. They're fucking 65 overweight. Like I'm like. They're not. How are these guys athletic? So I'm surprised.
John Daly was my hero.
Oh no, he's great. No, I think he's. I love it. You know,
I would always play as him on the Game Boy golf or PlayStation golf or whatever. Yeah,
but yeah, so many of them are just like they look out of shape. They look like they just show up. You know, like I mean, I can't golf.
Not most of them. Most of them look like they're in pretty
good shape. I was going to say, isn't it more that the guys are super in shape now, the top guys?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Clearly, I don't watch golf. So
yeah, it could take its toll on your body.
Maybe you're thinking of bowling.
Maybe I'm thinking of curling. You know, people in the Olympics, the best Olympic, they're out there pregnant, and they're in the Olympics, you know? Like, really? Okay.
You know, sometimes big guys really know how to use their bodies efficiently. Because, like, when I watch really, really big guys play drums and they make it look effortless, like, they're because, you know, playing drums for an hour and a half can be taxing unless you're just playing jazz or, you know, kind of holding back. But you see big guys really go for it. They just know how to use their body efficiently. Yep.
Maybe
that's happen.
I just got to.
Like
go
you.
I just got to
like
go
you.
For it.
Using you know, your body efficiently.
Competitive eating or
he
something,
can efficiently,
you know?
Yeah, eat some double-doubles and drink some Truly seltzers.
At Dexter's party, I had one of his backyard parties, you know, for Nitro or whatever, right? They had the In-N-Out truck, and I ate eight double-doubles.
Eight double-doubles.
Yeah.
Man, they're free, so you kept on going back.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop. Until they cut me off. But yeah.
Those backyard parties were fun, by the way. Those Halloween ones you had?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Back in the day, a long time ago. Right. That was so cool. So crazy who would show up, you know. Friends of friends, right? So it might be, I don't know, Exene showed up Exene once, and it was like, whoa.
That's rad.
You know,
yeah.
So
it was,
cool.
Those parties were top-notch, man.
That's where I first got to know Steve Soto, hanging out at one of the parties and got to talking to him.
Yeah.
So rest
in
peace,
Steve. All those guys. Yeah.
Love that guy.
Oh, man. Now, tomorrow is your wedding anniversary. Right?
Tomorrow's my wedding anniversary, 26 years.
Wow. 26 years.
You've got quite some time with your wife. 24 years.
24. Yeah. Right, a half a century between the two of you.
Yeah.
Wow. Easy. All right. A bunch of old married guys. You've been married a long time now, right?
Yeah, I've been married since 92, so that's 27 years, something. 27 years?
That's way more than that.
92.
37. No, 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 96. We've been together since 98.
I was going to say.
You know, I actually have a barcode. We got
married when
barcodes.
Ignition came out?
Yeah, we got matching barcodes when we got married. So I actually have it tattooed on my arm so I don't forget. February 92 is when we got together, and 96 is when we got married.
All
so.
Right.
Yeah, so it has been 27 years married. I didn't forget. Yeah. I didn't even have to look at my barcode.
So there's a woman out there who has put up with this guy for 31 years, right? Can you believe that?
Yeah.
What was that thing you posted on Instagram the other day? Is
every time says anytime somebody says you're a lucky man. Yeah, you're a lucky man. They just mean they want to fuck your wife, you know.
The polite way of saying I want to fuck your wife.
Yeah. I know about that.
There's truth to that.
No, our better halves, right?
Yeah.
We've been, you know.
Yep. Well, it's the one nice thing about being together so long, like when she like says, "Why do you do that?" I'm like, "You fucking knew. There's no surprises. You knew all of this a long time ago, you know. So don't try to change me now.
Right.
You know, you're too loud.
It's not
really?
Just met me.
Yeah,
you're too loud.
Yeah, she told me you're too loud. Really? Okay, that's not nothing new. You've known this since we were friends in high school."
You can probably fart whenever you want now, right? You know,
I got the
back.
Green light to just do anything at this point, right? Like,
I wonder if there's like a wish that, like, okay, well, he's younger now, and maybe that part of him will just fade as he matures. Because, like, so my wife's sober, and she was when we first started dating, and I am the opposite of that. And I love drinking.
and she knew that.
And I think she keeps waiting for me to go, like, hey, like, what part of that is going to, like, grow up a little bit?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels too good. I'm going to keep going. Yeah.
My wife was sober when I met her, too, but she's not anymore.
Yeah. You dragged her down.
I
dragged her
down.
Went the other way.
But I think she still kind of keeps waiting for me to, you know, it's just similar. She's like, when are you going to be done with that? I'm like, I don't ever want to be fully done with that. I'll take breaks. The comedian Bert Kreischer says, He goes, I love drinking. I love drinking so much that I'm going to do whatever it takes to be able to do it. You know, I'll take breaks. I'll do whatever I need to do. I want to drink the rest of my life.
That's right. I love
it
that.
It's so much fun. Yeah. He says,
give that like, up for good? No way.
Yeah. He says, take hey, breaks, you want to go out to brunch? Bottomless mimosas. You know that's going to be a great day.
My wife likes when I drink, actually. I know a lot of people, they get, you know, the wife might get bummed out because the guy gets sloppy or whatever, but she prefers it.
Yeah, and when I've seen you drink, I think you're the same way. I'm a happy drunk. I don't get angry. I don't get physical. I don't get violent. You know, upset. I'm happy.
Yeah,
I'm in my happy place.
It's a happy drunk.
You know? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cheers you to just that. Get a little bit louder, but you're the same way.
Well, imagine that, even louder. You know.
Ooh, yeah. What we've experienced.
Yeah,
It's good. All right. You consider yourself a happy drunk?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 Like, I'm way. Well, it's weird to self-judge when you're drinking, but from what others have told me, I'm much more sociable, more fun to be around. You know, of course, if it goes too far, it could go the other way, I guess. But I'm too serious if I'm, like, not having a drink here and there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Too focused, too serious, too driven. And, you know...
Is it all work and no beer makes Homer something go crazy?
Yeah, it's like take the stick out of the ass. Let's go here.
Yeah. Well, beer is proof that God wants man to be happy, right? That's Benjamin Franklin, that whole thing, right? Yeah.
Mark Twain said, of the demonstrably wise, there are but two. There are those who keep their facilities atrophied with drink and those who commit suicide outright and end the farce.
That's good.
That's dark, good. But yeah.
I like the self-assessment, though. You know, when I drink, I am funny as fuck, man. I'm great. I'm hilarious. Right? I am talented. I play better. You know? There's absolutely happier. No downside at all.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever got a stage where you're too drunk and you realize, oh, shit, I'm too fucked up and I've got to hang on now?
Oh, yeah. Long time ago for me.
Yeah. It's been a while. But I usually just have fun. Like, I've never been to the point where, like, there was one time when I was like, oh, I was pretty embarrassed. When we played with L7 in Rennes, France early on.
Okay.
And I heard like tape. They had tape, like a board tape of it. I was like, oh, God. That was pretty bad. Yeah.
We're usually just trying to hang on anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I know. Yeah.
Well, let me tell it from a different angle. So, because the drummers are the ones driving the train.
They should be.
Oh, yeah.
They should be.
Yeah.
It is terrifying to be in that position. And it happened twice. And I remember them both distinctively. One was in 2003 and the other one was like 96 or 7. And I remember thinking, oh, you're a fucking idiot.
Oh, man.
I remember just hanging on and saying, okay, next song, just get through it. Next song, get through it. Just watching that set list and counting it down.
Wow.
Yeah, because if the wheels fall off for me,
right,
the rest of the band's toast.
Yeah, that's the whole train goes off the track.
That's
true,
huh?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to piss my diaper. Oh, shit, I'm not wearing a diaper.
Damn it. I knew there was a reason.
God damn it today.
Man, we used to have this... pee bucket, or I had a pee bucket. It was like one of those oversized Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets, and it would be sitting behind me because I'm pissing in it the whole way through the show in between songs.
Right.
And at some point, the rest of the band got wind of it, and they saw it, and so they started using it too.
Oh, no.
And so my tech had to get a second one because it would get filled to the top with this.
Whoa. Your drum tech must have loved you.
Yeah, really.
He hated it so much. He's like, I can't believe I have to carry this massive piss bucket.
Oh, man.
Now two of them out every night.
Oh, wow, funny.
Wow, there you go. See?
Yeah. Once I hit the stage... I think I stage fright. I can't pee. I couldn't pee in between a song. Every once in a while, like if you're doing Gone Away acoustic, I have time to go run to the bathroom. But it's stage fright keeps me from peeing.
You can build in bathroom breaks in your show if you want to, I guess.
Yeah.
That's part of why I really don't drink before the show or drink very much because I don't want to have to pee because I don't have a bucket next to my mic stand. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A new
Something
trick.
To think about.
Attic.
Catheter. Yeah. You know, let's do it. Oh, man.
Hot water bottle taped to your ankle.
Is there anything else you want to talk about that we've left out? Or
man, I feel like we covered quite a bit.
A lot. It's just amazing. You forget about all the connections over the years that we've had together with our bands and just, you know, living by each other and stuff. Right. And it's so cool.
I've always just kind of been curious because you guys did come up through the punk scene, right? Like, I remember seeing No Doubt at the Ice House with a bunch of punk bands. I mean, was there any times where, like, No Doubt really wasn't kind of, I mean, Offspring fit in pretty good with the punk scene, but No Doubt kind of didn't. But, I mean, you guys were always my wife's favorite band, right? Like, but I mean, were there ever any times where there was, like, it was just awkward?
Fair question. I think because of the styles that we were kind of melding together, especially in the early days, we kind of were able to fit in with a lot of different bills. And so, yeah, we did play a lot of punk shows and we opened for a lot of punk bands. But then there were times where we were playing with other bands that, and a lot of them were one-offs where, you know, they were kind of on more pop-leaning side of K-rock bands, type bands. Right. And it really didn't matter. You know, our early stuff, we had a little bit of, you know, fast stuff. And because the ska scene, which we were part of in the really early days, and the punk stuff, it kind of, you could play together.
It blended, yeah.
Sure. And
it's still that way.
Yeah.
And
I remember we opened for Bad Religion up in Berkeley once. And the first song we played was in the dark. And all the punk Bad Religion fans were like, fuck you guys, when the lights come on, you guys are fags. And just all the names, all those were coming at us. But then by like the third or fourth song, we had them.
Yeah.
Because we had enough fast songs back then where the pit was going. And that was usually the case. We didn't have a hard time getting punk fans to get into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Even though we weren't a punk band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right on.
What was the worst pairing? Do you remember like playing with a band going, oh, this is awful. We shouldn't have played this.
Offspring.
Man, that's a really good question. There was this one band that we played with, and they had their banner that was self-made banner, the spray paint called Sons of Satan. Yeah. And this is somewhere in Texas. And we didn't have songs on the radio yet, so it was like a small club, and their music was super heavy. It was metal, and it didn't fit at all.
Yeah, that would be weird. Yeah,
yeah.
What do you have somebody in mind?
I was just wondering. But we've had shows that were kind of weird. There was that show with Hard Stance, Zach's first band, Zach De La Rocha's first band, and there was a band that played in between who was friends with the guy who owned the club. It wasn't the promoter. The promoter, you know, booked a bunch of straight edge hardcore punk bands.
Talk about not fitting in. So, you know, we're like kind of a regular punk band, but you know, we drink beer and stuff.
We had long hair at the time too. We had long hair.
So when we would get on these bills with straight edge bands, that was what was really weird, right? It was like, I thought that band was called Inside Out or something like that, but
I thought it was Hard Stance, but it could have been something else. I can't remember the names of the bands that played that time.
And it wasn't like, I don't remember them giving us shit necessarily.
Oh, they
directly.
Did.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was funny because the total.
I was trying to be diplomatic here. Yeah. Okay.
Like the heavy metal band or whatever classic rock band that played before us, like the singer was channeling Robert Plant for sure. He had his shirt unbuttoned, his, you know, golden curly locks, and they were like kind of laughing. All the hardcore guys were laughing at them, but laughing with them as well, kind of playing with them. And then we take the stage, and they're calling us fucking hippies and going out. And then we started playing, and about three songs into it, they shut up. And eventually, I think Zach came up and said, "Hey man, I'm sorry, we were dicks." And I think he came up and apologized for it at least. But
all right.
But like I said, like four or five songs into it, they came around and. All right, this is not what we thought it was going to be. I think they thought we were going to be a worse version of that classic rock band, and we were just a...
And the audiences, too, right? I think, like, when you're playing shows with a hardcore band or whatever, the more extreme the music, the more the audience kind of gets like that too.
Oh,
and like,
sure, yeah,
they don't want you to deviate from what they're there for, right? So when they see you play and you got long hair and you're not exactly hardcore like they are, they're very standoffish, yeah, at least at first, right?
My memory of this gig is it was mostly the other bands that were watching all the bands. There wasn't a whole lot of audience members. Did you ever have shows like that back in the day? Yeah.
Five paid, man. Oxford, Mississippi. Okay. Never forget it.
Where was it?
Oxford, Mississippi.
Five
paid at the door.
Wow.
And then we brought more people with us than actual paid members from than we met in the hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or the motel.
I remember six in New Jersey once. Does that ring a bell?
Six?
At the show. And it was like, okay.
I remember playing a VFW hall where there was a keg left unattended, and we just were filling up everything we could with all the beer. There was nobody there. It was just the bands, just the other bands.
Yeah, but the good old days.
That would have been 89, our very first cross-country tour, I think. The one in the pickup truck. Could have been the one in the van. Might have been the one in the van in 90.
But yeah. I always think it's funny when bands talk about how, well, yeah, when we first started, there was only 10 people there, and we're like, well, that was our story for 10 years. It wasn't like the first year, and it was really nothing. Like, seriously, I don't think we could draw more than maybe 50 people until Smash came out, basically.
Yeah, I remember one show in particular, and it was Guttermouth, Pennywise, and you guys, Copacetic Cafe, and the place was so fucking packed.
The promoter wanted us to go on last.
You guys went on
last. Really? Okay, that's cool. You know, but no, it wasn't because
Pennywise. They go on after Pennywise, and the place just emptied out. I remember, and I'm like, okay, I guess the pit is me.
It was so. I still have nightmares. Like, we'll be playing our high school's Lyceum, and we empty it out. You know, school gymnasium, and it's empty. The people keep leaving. Still have that.
Yeah,
recurring nightmare.
Yeah, dreams about a show going bad or nobody showing up. Yeah. I think I have those from time to time. I don't know, but
you just reminded me of something, and I totally forgot about this. So we had that. There was one show we played. It wasn't with other bands. It was just us, and it was it was in San Diego at a convention center room with Australian exchange students, and we had a pretty good history of like winning over people. Our track record was good. This night, there was probably 150 people there. And they were there for their function. We just happened to be the band that was playing. And we start playing, and they come forward, and most of them actually turned around and went back to their back of the room to have conversations and go back to their social gathering.
God. Oh my
God. It was
God.
A total opposite effect.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
We had a similar thing. We played a co-op up in Berkeley, and it's dinner time. And like they would just, I don't know, they paid a band to come in and play for dinner time, and all these students are coming through, getting their food, sitting down at tables, eating and clinking, and you just hear the cutlery, and we're up there rocking, trying to put on this show
to the sound of silverware.
Yeah, people sitting eating. It was all the most uncomfortable show
that
anyway
was,
done
that
ever.
Was really bad.
Yeah,
really bad. But
that's funny.
Oh my God.
Oh well. Yeah.
We went from there, and then we played some other backyard party there with, I think, the InSaints. Remember the girl from the InSaints peeing on the audience?
Yes.
And stuff? Yeah.
That was the second show of the day.
Yeah.
How does she do that?
She just kind of lifts up her skirt. Lift up her skirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She can kind of point it, make it go outward.
Yeah. It was
she
impressive.
She goes, I got something for you. And right on the.
I'll still remember that quote because it's like,
oh my God, I'm shocked. This is amazing.
Urethra control.
Yeah.
She was good at it.
Well, hopefully P-Funk doesn't have a patent on that either. Going to get her in trouble now. She's going to get a letter.
So our day got better. Put it that way. Well, dude, it's been so great to have you here. Thank you very much, man.
Thanks for joining us, man.
So cool.
Yeah,
really.
Come
back and see us again sometime.
Cool. All right. We'll see you.
Good luck talking to Warren.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
He's really smart.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
He's a fun guy.
Those two will go at it, and we'll just
sit here and drink.
Ask for clarification every so often.